Hello and welcome to season 5 of Canine Hoopers World, the podcast. Enjoy. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Canine Hoopers World, the podcast. Now, this lady has been on before, and we did a bit of a deep dive on collies. We are going to be talking about fucking collies again today, but in the most loveliest way. And we're also going to be touching a bit on puppies because both myself and our guest today have recently got our puppies. They are very similar ages, so we're going to be talking puppies, farms, livestock, and all that good stuff. So Martina, hello, how are you?
Hello, I'm very, very well, although we're all sleep deprived at the moment. So you might see my eyes being a bit like, oh, I need to sleep. But yeah, apart from that, we're really good.
Good. Yeah, I know that the change in sleep patterns is, although for me, it's coincided with my husband on a brand new building project where he has to be up by 6 anyway. So actually the puppy being up just before 6 at the moment is not the worst case scenario because the household would be getting up at 6 anyway. So
yeah,
I can deal with it. But if she could, yeah, she could just eke it out to 6 o'clock, like it would just make my brain feel better because 5:55 is still very early.
I know it is. Yeah, no, we are taking turns. So we do one night is me getting up multiple times a day because he's been poorly at the moment.
Yeah.
So we try to avoid him pooing in his pen, but it's not always successful.
Mm-hmm.
And then another night, it's my partner back doing it. So we're just trying to do one night each, unless I have to work a lot. And then she does 2 nights in a row. Bless her. Yeah.
So shout out to Beck. Thank you for being helpful with the training of the puppy and the stuff. So Martina, for people that don't know you, I mean, go back to like season 2 or something. I can't remember what season you came on, but it was a minute back, right? You were probably one of the first guests on, I think. So for people that don't know you, who are you and what do you do?
So I am an Italian dog trainer, but I live in the UK. I moved, it's going to be 10 years now this summer. So I'm planning a little party to celebrate 10 years in the UK and hopefully getting my citizenship this year at some point as well.
Yeah.
So I started as a dog walker. Actually, before that, I started as a horse trainer. But then from a dog walker, I just decided I wanted to work with dogs. So I started my courses to become a dog trainer. And since like it was 2001, so I think we actually talked before I completely switched to specializes in border collies. I think mm-hmm. we talked about collies, but I didn't switch my name and everything. So yeah. I now completely work with border collies and herding breeds. Of course, I will work with other dogs if it happens. But I get mainly people that come to me for issue with their border collies,
mm-hmm.
And other herding breeds that struggle with the urban environment and struggle with, you know, the movement around them and the noise and the overwhelming of the urban life after they've been bred to work and live in farms.
Because that's the thing, isn't it? Because people don't realise that for the herders, for that pastoral group as a whole, urban living is tricky because there's a lot to navigate because not only have you got the social rules that you have to, you know, abide by, but also there are so many opportunities to herd the world.
Yes. Yeah, so it's. I think that the herding especially, so the collies, the bearded collies, the border collies, the Kelpies, probably Australian Shepherds, mm-hmm. You know, the ones that are still bred to actually react to fast movement. Of course, your Mallee as well, and all those breeds are still bred to react to fast movement because mm-hmm. we want them either for work or sport nowadays as well. Then they see movement and their first instincts, what they're bred to do is to respond to that movement.
Mm-hmm.
And of course that can transform into a dog that will start looking at cars, looking at bikes, people that run, kids that run, birds, wildlife in general, you know, anything that moves. I can see now in my puppy, you know, I was just thinking about it the other day. If he was in a normal pet home,
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't walk a puppy like that on a road now. He's so triggered by movement, which is what I want. I want him to run before even the sheep make the decision to go a certain way. I want him to be there to block them. That's what we breed them to do. But as a puppy in a urban environment where movement happens and it's cars and bikes and kids and other dogs and cats and everything, that's really hard because he's triggered straight away by movement and he gets frustrated if he can't get there. I can see in the pen already, you know, when I let him out in his pen and the dogs are running off in the garden, if he's not calm and relaxed and he has energies, he gets frustrated because he wants to chase them. And on a walk, he's already rounding everyone up. He's trying to stop everyone's movement. He's trying to anticipate where they go. He's doing it with the cats. And he's 10 weeks old. And he's all there already.
Because genetics, right?
Yes, genetics. And I look at him and I was like, yes, we want that. But, you know, the same happening to someone that doesn't notice those things and doesn't know what those things can actually develop into, that is a potential car chaser.
Yeah.
I have no doubt. He could easily be a car chaser. He's got a good eye to fixate on things. And he's already, you know, herding the cats like a proper little sheepdog. Makes me laugh. I laugh. But a lot of people, you know, wouldn't, because I don't have any problem and I know I can manage it. And I know that he's never going to be walked in the city anyway.
No, but the thing is as well, is that you do literally live on a farm. Like, yes, you
that's
now moved.
That we didn't say.
Yes. So yeah, because you've moved. Because when when I came to teach at your old place, like you were kind of in the suburbs, and like it was just sort of like there were houses around. You had kind of farmland near you, but it was probably more urban than definitely what you're living in now. Because you guys just took on a farm, right?
Yes, so we just lived on a semi-detached house with a garden. Semi-rural, you know, in Cheshire, but still a house with a garden. Mm-hmm. And nearly a year and a half ago, we learned that my partner's uncle that was running and living on the farm that her grandfather took on. Mm-hmm. So my partner's mum was born here.
Yeah.
They decided it was time to retire because farming is changing a lot, and you know, he was at the time where he says, I don't want to take another change on, I took too many, so I'm going to retire. And we were told so by Beck's parents, my partner's parents, and we looked at each other and was like, really? So is nobody taking it on in the family? Because you know, he has sons, and we thought that one of them might take the farm on. It's like, no, they're too young and they want to live their lives. And I was like, okay, do you think that we could? And everyone looked at us like, are you crazy? You've never farmed before. So that's all started it, really. We started chatting about it and we were put forward to the landlord. So one thing that is important to know, that a lot of people think I bought the farm, but it doesn't work like this. The majority of people in the UK, you are a tenant. You know, farms are owned by big, you know, either small or big estates and landlords. So the farm was rented for two generations to my partner's family.
Mm-hmm.
So we were put forward, and although we don't have great experience, I have experience. I've done some lambing, I've done some work with sheep. And of course my dogs are trained as a hobby to mm-hmm. herd. And I did trial a little bit with one of them. We don't have farming background, but I think what really worked was that, apart from the fact we have family, so we keep on the family, on the same family on the farm, sort of. Yeah. I also came in with my diversification in dog training. And nowadays, farms, unfortunately, need to diversify to actually survive. Yeah. So the fact that I could take that in already and is already built and is very much related to farming, because it's border collies, it's not like, you know, another breed.
Yeah.
That work our favor. And the fact that my partner is an ecologist and farming is going towards environmental schemes and environmental friendly type of farming, all together, that made it possible for us to be accepted as tenants.
Yeah.
So we moved to our farm in Lancashire.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the first thing that came to my mind was, if Jeremy Clarkson can do it, then I'm sure you girls will be absolutely fine, because, like, you know. But are you going to be doing crops and livestock, or is it mainly livestock? What's the...
So around here is only livestock.
Okay.
Because we are in the Forest of Bowland. So we are, you know, on the hills. We are just inside the forest, so we are not on the fells. So we don't have fells to graze. And that's actually quite nice because we have nice green fields. We don't have any, you know, any hard ground. And he's been always on sheep and cattle. So we are going to, we started with sheep. We have our own flock now, which is going to grow in time. And we're planning to get some cattle at some point. And of course, you know, not officially, but I'm going to have goats and I'm going to have ducks and I'm going to have chickens. I'm going to have everything I can.
I mean, it's really, like, literally on a farm, I feel you need all these other animals. Like,
I need to have it in my life at some point, you know, you have to experience. I would like a couple of ponies at some point as well and things like that. But,
you know, I mean, the dogs can round up the ducks. And I mean, you see it quite a lot, don't you, at like the country fairs and stuff with the little sheepdog demos are generally done with ducks rather than sheep, just because it's much easier transporting a load of ducks than it is a load of sheep.
Exactly. Yes. So I'd like to eventually get a little, little group of ducks. And
are you going to get the runner ducks that do all the cool, like, I love runner ducks.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
So with the sheep, like, I'm not a sheep expert. I just know that sheep tend to get themselves in ridiculous situations and try and die quite a lot.
Yes.
But sheep are rubbish.
Yeah, that's the favorite hobby, normally is dying. Yeah. So we are new to farming. And we, of course, we had a good year to decide what we're going to do. And of course, when you start asking, everyone is like in dog training. You will find out that anyone has their own opinion and anyone has their own beliefs and anyone has their own experience. So everyone will tell you what they've done and what they think is best. And of course, initially, the first easiest thing would have been to keep the sheep that were on the farm because they're used to it. They're resistant to what lives on the farm, you know, parasites and viruses and everything. Mm-hmm. And they're already here. So we just buy the sheep off because, of course, we had to buy everything off. You know, the previous tenants, although it was family, still, you know, it's business. But we, as you know, a bit, I think because we are dog trainers, we just studied, we just went into the science of things and we tried to learn as much as we could about how we want to farm as well. We ask ourselves, how do we want to farm? Mm-hmm. And we decided actually we want to farm in a sustainable way.
Yeah.
And we want to farm with nature, not against nature. And because we have so much ideas on diversification, although we will farm the land and we will still sell our products, we want to do it in a way that is sustainable. So we decided not to keep the breed of sheep that work on the farm, which is the typical breed that will make you those 20, 30 pounds more at the market, because they're big and they're bred to be, you know, to be good and to produce a lot of fat and to be quite big. Yeah,
they're bred to be meat sheep, aren't they? Like,
exactly. So they're bred to be the biggest sheep you can get. The problem is that to us that comes with a lot of problems. One problem was that they, of course, are wool sheep, which means that they grow wool that needs to be cut every year, that needs to be sheared every year, and that needs a lot of maintenance because with the climate change, flies that create a lot of problem in sheep comes earlier and earlier and earlier, and this is causing fly strikes, which means that they start laying eggs in the wool before you even get around to shear them. And that means that you have to apply very bad chemicals that you're not even supposed to touch, because otherwise you need, you know, it's really toxic for you, in order to actually not get bitten by the larvae when they develop. That is a insecticide that goes then into the environment and doesn't prevents larvae from having a mouth. So anything that they touch that is larvae related, you know, it's going to kill a lot of insects around.
Yeah, of course.
So it's not good for us, it's not good for the environment, probably it's not good for the sheep, although it's safe enough that you can eat the sheep after a certain days that they've been applied. And then, you know, they need feeding, because in order to produce that amount of fat and meat, they need a lot of food to sustain it. And we don't want to go down the route of having to feed a lot of grains and extra things, which involves a lot of, you know, expenses, but also a lot of petrol to move around. And you know, it's a lot of things that impact the environment. So we went for a breed of sheep that sheds wool.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's not a breed, it's actually a composite breed that has been created in Wales in the 60s by a guy that recently actually passed away. a farmer that decided we don't need wool anymore. I mean, I don't know if anyone knows, but wool is doesn't have any value in the UK at the moment. We do need it.
The wool industry has really suffered. I actually follow on Facebook, and I can't remember the company's name, but they are still producing British wool. They're producing carpets. They're like producing fabric, and they are really trying to bring the wool industry back to how it should be. Because,
and I completely agree with it. And I would love to have some sheep specifically to do that, like some Shetland, some nice woolly sheep specifically for that. But your more commercial breed type of wool, you know, it doesn't have any value. So we decided we wanted to use less chemicals. Mm-hmm. We wanted to feed a bit less, and we want, you know, be more environmental friendly. So we decided to go for this breed, which of course they're smaller, they don't grow as fast, they don't pay as much money. Mm-hmm. But if we have done our studies right and we talk to a lot of people, you know, we will be able to produce meat that is grass fed.
Lovely.
And is not being, you know, it's not been input. There's not been a lot of input for the lamb to get to a point that we can sell it.
Yeah.
And as I said, they shed themselves. So some of them have started shedding now, which means that by the time it's May, they will have a very, very short fleece.
Okay.
They look like they've been sheared pretty much by May.
Yeah.
Which means that when the fly arrives, they will have no wool for the fly to lay their eggs. It still happens every now and then, but the percentage is very low.
And obviously, with a shorter fleece, it's going to be easier to see what's going on with the sheep. Because this thing, isn't it? Because the big sheep that you were talking about, the kind of common sheep that you see that are the big fluffy ones, they're the ones that also end up getting stuck upside down and things, because the fleece is so heavy that they roll over and then they're stuck, and then they're just stuck.
Or they're built like that. They're built like a tank. So they can't really, they don't have the muscle to prop themselves up. You know, we've not had one sheep rolling over. Maybe it will happen when they're being more pregnant. I don't know. We'll keep an eye on it. The other thing that this breed has been very hard selected for is fit problems. So we had one lame sheep every now and then. And normally we spray it with a bit of blue spray and that's it. And we have around 90 sheep and we don't have one that is lame.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. And of course, we'll keep an eye on the ones that are lame. And if they carry on being lame, we don't keep them. You know, we don't keep them in our breeding plans.
Yeah.
And same goes for anything else that is a usual problem, you know, like abortion or not getting pregnant or not having enough milk or not having good mothering abilities.
Yeah.
Anything that is not making your life easy is going to be, is being culled very hardly in the breed, which is the same thing that you do we like hill sheep, you know, those, the ones that live on the fells, on the hills in Scotland and Wales, and everywhere in England, you know, the ones that need to survive, they are bred for these hardy qualities.
Yeah.
But you tend not to do it when you have this kind of more selected type of sheep where all your aim is in having something that produces good meat. You know, it's like dogs. If you concentrate on one trait, like how good their angle and their coat is, then you forget to select for good temperament and soundness and good genetic.
Well, let's be honest, it's if you're picking the pretty colours at the moment, isn't it? Like with so many of the breeds, they're just being bred for whatever pretty My Little Pony colour they come out in, rather than, oh, does that dog have a sound temperament? Like,
yes.
It's tricky, but I love the fact that you guys are being so mindful about the environment. And obviously, you know, Beck has an amazing background in that, but also like just making it more sustainable, because we know, we are aware that the way food is produced isn't sustainable. You know, the amount of mouths that need to be fed and all the rest of it. But I mean, one of the main reasons that I don't eat meat is because I don't like the abattoir process. That's my choice. You know, I want to know where the meat's come from. You know, I have eaten meat that friends have dispatched themselves, for want of a better term. You know, I'm talking, you know, like venison, stuff like that. But for me, I don't like that whole big mass farming and being put on great big lorries, going to big abattoirs, queuing. Like, I just don't like that process.
Yeah.
I also don't like the waste at the end of that process. Like, for me, if an animal is losing their life, that whole animal should be used. And I love the fact that you guys have been so mindful of picking a breed that is smaller, that you know what you're going to be producing, and you're looking at quality and sustainability as well as profit, because of course you have to make a profit because it is a business. Yeah, I think people definitely forget this, that farming at the end of the day is a business, and the supermarkets don't always help the farmers.
No, they don't. There's a big campaign now, of course, around the whole Europe as well and the UK about government and supermarket, and you know, our own government telling us you have to diversify. I'm lacking that. I wasn't born in farming, and we have our own diversification, but it's not right. Farmers shouldn't diversify in order to survive, because they're producing any food that we eat. You know, we wouldn't be able to survive without farming. So
right,
it's really sad that that's happening. And yeah, I think that most farmers have nature. You know, if you love farming, is because you love to be in this environment.
Yeah.
And you love to be in nature, and you love animals. Otherwise you'll be a doctor or something else.
Right.
And I think that if they were put into the position of being able to farm and maintain their family, because they have enough money to do it, they will be the first one to put nature forward, you know, yeah, in one of their priorities. The problem is that when you have to survive, sometimes you have to close your eyes to doing things a certain way because you have to produce more money.
Of course.
It's hard, you know, it's that kind of finding that balance. So it's, you can't tell farmers, you know, be better at being environmental friendly, but at the same time, I'm not giving you enough money to do that.
Right. So how are they meant to do things? But, you know, like, we know how important like bees are. Like, it's a fact, right? Without bees, there is nothing, because we need the pollinators, right? But the fact that, again, you know, you're saying that there are chemicals that need to be used on the sheep to stop the sheep from suffering, getting ill, because a fly strike is horrible. Rabbits can get fly strike as well. And yes, it's an awful, awful thing.
Any animal can get it, yeah.
Yeah. I think mainly like sheep and rabbits are the ones that are most commonly known. But yeah, any animal can get fly strike. It's a nasty bloody thing. And I totally understand why the chemicals need to be used. But then when those chemicals are potentially going to go into the environment and not necessarily be targeting the specific flies that they should be, and then it starts, you know, how is that going to then impact the rest of the food chain as well? Because
Yeah. I mean, there are big questions that, of course, I don't have an answer, and
yeah,
nobody has an answer. And, you know, and it's a process, I think. Well, what's happening now is that, of course, the government is giving money to far more environmentally friendly.
Yep.
So the less chemical you use, you can get money for use less chemicals on your farm, for example, yep, and things like that. So they're trying. And this is where it's going to be a process, I think, we'll see developing in the next 5 to 10 years. So we are just at the beginning of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, you know, I don't know how much, you know, listeners know about, but farmers get paid to farm from the government, and up to now, and until 2027, I think, there is what is called the single farm payments, which you get just because you have acres of land.
Right.
And that's going to be rolled out, and we don't get it as new entrants, for example. We don't get that. But there's going to be new schemes coming out, which are all meant for farmers to do something. Instead of just getting money because you've got acreage, you get money because you maintain your fences and you maintain your edges, you plant some trees, you take care of your wildlife, you use less chemicals. So And there's a big controversy, because a lot of people don't want to do it. They just want to farm. Mm-hmm. And I understand that, because traditions, yeah, and you know, that's what they've had. They've done all their lives. So it's a difficult place to be. I feel that I'm in between. I'm not a farmer yet. I have a farm, but I don't feel myself as a farmer yet. I've not had my first lambing. So I see things from another point of view. Mm-hmm. But I do understand that who is already in it and has to go through the change, it's really hard as well. So I can't blame them. But we're trying to find our way. You know, we are joining groups and associations that already support certain type of farming. So we're getting mentors and everything to help us. Because, of course, you know, we are at the beginning. So we're looking into regenerative farming, which is another big thing, which means that you manage your land so that you always have good grass, because you're not just letting everyone graze the whole farm all the time.
So you're rotating the fields around.
You're rotating the
something
fields,
I'm familiar with in horse background. Yeah, yeah, you rotate the fields, because otherwise you run out of grass.
Yeah, and I mean, you do it anyway, but you do it in a more kind of scientific way. So there's a proper regime that we don't know anything about. So we'll get mentors to teach us.
Amazing.
It's a lot. It's a lot.
But also, it sounds like with kind of trying to be more sustainable, you're also going to have a more kind of natural environment around. But with that, you're then going to get more wildlife. You're going to be attracting more birds because there's more insects. And then you're going to be getting more birds of prey because there's more little birds. And like, you're just going to, like, it does have a positive effect on the ecosystem, doesn't it?
Yeah, and it's only 133 acres, which sounds like
only.
I know, but in the grand schemes,
I mean, to be fair, the Australian listeners are like, that's tiny, that's not even
a farm. And the Americans as well,
right? Whereas over like the British listeners are like, that's ginormous.
I know. It's a good size. It's a good size for us. I wouldn't want, I think, more than this. Well, I'll tell you in a few years. So it was a bit scary initially. But yeah, now that we are here and we leave, you know, I'm looking outside the window because I can see everything. I'll show you later. And you know, now that we are here, it's a good size, and we can do, you know, we can do what we want. You know, we definitely have enough land to do what we want. And yeah, so we are going to do a lot of things for birds as well, which was done already on the farm. So we're going to go into it's like a stewardship that you commit to maintain certain fields a certain way for some bird nesting, ground nesting birds. So we're going to go into all that, and we already see the birds coming in, and that's going to be amazing. So which means no dogs on that field, nothing apart from livestock, you know, to protect the nests and everything. So we will try our best. We'll try our best.
But I love that. So you kind of touched when you said like, oh, we're not farmers yet, we haven't had our first lambing. Let's talk about lambing season, because this is the point when, unfortunately, a lot of dog owners fuck up. Like, let's just be brutally honest about it, because they see, like, when sheep are pregnant, getting chased by. And there is an argument, isn't there? Because I know there's people that are like, oh, but if they're worked by dogs, they're being chased. It's not the same as just a random dog coming in the field and running amok. It's different. Yeah. So can we just kind of explain that? Because I know people are like, well, the sheepdog are in the field with the sheep, so they get chased. And that's not chasing, that's moving.
Yeah. So first thing is, of course, part of the fact that sheep get used to dogs, and they know, you know, they know the dogs are around. So we have two breeds. We have Border Collies and we have a Dark Tolling Retriever. And it's amazing to see the difference. When the Dark Tolling are around, it's like they are part of the environment. The sheep, they might move away from them, but sometimes they follow them. And sometimes they graze, they pick their head up and like, oh, it's the orange one. And they go back eating. No problem. And if Beck is around on her own, she can get very close to the sheep with or without a dog. If I appear and my collies appear and they hear my voice, the sheep go like, oh no, because of course they know my voice. I'm the one commanding the collies. Mm-hmm. You know, if I'm there, normally there is collies around. But even with my collies, of course, they don't panic. They know them by now. They know how, and they know. So a random dog entering a field, you can tell the sheep start. And we have footpath running for the farm.
Okay.
Going different direction. We have 1, 2, 3 fields that have footpath in it, not 4 fields that have footpath in it. So, you know, they do see dogs, and you can tell that when they see the random dog, they do act a bit different, because it's just different shape, different color. Sheep are intelligent animals.
Yes.
And they learn. So definitely they do. And even if it's the collies, they know that they're there to work them a certain way. And I think they learn to respect the dog that respects them.
Mm-hmm.
And they react differently, of course. And I have two dogs at the moment. I'm working, Jock and Tay. Jock is my 8 years old, and he's very fast. And like, he's one of those dogs that I do first and then I think. So he will, you know, and he will rush. You know, if he needs to move sheep, he wants to do it at the fastest pace possible. And of course, I should train him, but he's 8 and he's just starting to be a farm dog. So I think I can do some with him and I can improve it. But, you know, we all know that the older the dog, they have the more difficult it is to change those habits. So he's one of those dogs that have a very fast pace and rushes a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have Tay, which is my 3-year-old, which I thought he would never get to make as a farm dog because he didn't have the drive. And actually that lack of drive at the beginning made him now a very reliable dog. He's really reliable. He's really calm, really respectful. If the sheep don't really want to go, it takes his time to convince them. Which, of course, if you have a very emergency situation, you might not want that. But to move my pregnant ewes, he's the best dog.
Yeah,
he doesn't rush them. He listens very well. So if I need to stop him, he will stop. He will have his nice, soft movement and pace. Never startle them. Never panics them. And it takes his time. So sheep knows these dogs, and they act very differently. And they, you know, a random dog coming in that moves a completely different way will startle them. And even if it doesn't mean to chase them, even if he's running around like a spaniel, I saw a spaniel running around our fields because he was off lead. He wasn't chasing the sheep. He was probably going for the pheasants and the hare in the rushes.
Yeah.
But the sheep got startled and started running. Because, of course, they're not used to that type of dog. They're not used to that type of movement.
Well, and the thing is, the way the spaniels work, especially if it was quartering, so working in that figure of eight pattern that spaniels do, that is a very, very different picture to a collie. Yeah. Like, yeah, a completely definitely. Different picture.
Yeah. And, of course, in pregnancy, aborts are really, you know, if the sheep gets stressed. We have so many problems with abortion because we have a lot of viruses that bring us abortion. And we have a new one that is coming in from Europe now with midges, Schellenberg or something like that. I can't remember the pronunciation exactly. That's which is tough. Coming in with the midges because it's warm. And those midges that shouldn't be in the UK, they start coming in. And that creates abortion and malformation of fetus. So the lambs come out malformed that you have to put them to sleep. We have so many problems already that we need to fight. And a blue tongue has come in as well. And they're containing it. But if it doesn't get contained, it will spread. We don't have a vaccine for it. So we don't have a vaccine. There's so much already going on that kills, you know, the livelihood of farmers that we don't really need to add dogs to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And abortion because they get chased. And the problem is that a lot of the fields at this time of the year, especially, you know, they are empty because some sheep get off the high ground to get down to the lower ground in winter. They get fed, so they have to be close to the farm. So people walk in winter thinking, oh, these fields are clear from sheep. And then one day, suddenly, that field is full of newborn lambs that were moved because they are a few days old. It's warm enough. They can go back out in the fields with their mothers.
Yeah.
And this is where things start going wrong. Because people are like, oh, there were no sheep here yesterday, so my dog was off lead until yesterday. And it happened to me once with cows, not with sheep. I was taking the dogs to a field with a river every single day in lockdown. And then finally, one day, I enter with Moss, which is my less controllable of the collies. And there were cows in there. And I was like, shit, they were not here yesterday. So my life went in front of my eyes in 2 seconds where I saw Moss going down the river and then I see a cow coming out. But he recalled because that's what we've practiced, and he recalled away from the cow and came back to me, put him back on the lead. My heart was in my feet.
Yeah.
And then, you know, that was safe. But, you know, it happens to the best, and it happens to people that
I used to walk a lovely rescue dog at the rescue. I used to rock up there once a week to take him on an adventure. And again, we've been going in this field and it was cool. And then one day I just went through the gate. Didn't even read the sign on the gate.
Yeah.
Started walking across the field and went, that ain't a cow, shit. I have never about turned with a dog so calmly and quietly in my life because I was like, don't alert the bull. Don't alert the bull. I was thinking, because this dog as well wasn't the sort of dog that you could drop the lead and risk him getting out and meeting someone else because he had a bite history. So it was like, oh God, this is really bad. And I remember just literally backtracking really quietly out of this field and being like, mental note, if you see a sign on a gate, fucking read.
Yes. We need to get signs. I want to put signs everywhere.
I mean,
I want people to have signs at every corner they turn in my farm.
But the thing is, if you've given people information, then you've given them information. And then if they've chosen to ignore it, you can say, well, excuse me, did you not see the 20 signs you've walked past?
Yeah.
Whereas if there's no signage, there is that little, and I'm not saying they're in the right at all, but playing devil's advocate, people can go, oh, well, I didn't realise.
Yeah.
So yeah. I do think the signage helps, but I also think that part of the problem is you get people that feel they are entitled to be on the land because there are footpaths.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're entitled.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I think, and we, you know, we enjoy seeing people go through our farm. I thought I was going to be like, ah, no, I don't want people to
off my land.
But actually, the majority of people are very nice. They stop chatting with you. They ask you questions. They knew the farmer before us, so they want to know what type of sheep we have. And, you know, they've not seen the dogs working before because he had dog, but, you know, they haven't had it for a while. So it's actually quite nice to have people going through and stopping and chatting with you. And,
yep.
And majority of people are really respectful, especially around here.
Good.
So it's nice. But yes, it's one of those things, you know, you're still going through a farm business. I pay for it. I pay for my land. I pay for my sheep. It's my earning. So, you know, like I wouldn't walk through your garden and kick your pots, your plum pots, and, you know, or, you know, enter your workshop and destroy everything. Why you should do that with a dog and risking life of other animals? And some people will question, oh, but you killed them anyway. Well, it's a bit different. You know, yes, they will go to the abattoir to feed people, but they are taken care of. And at the end of the day, again, it's a business, and it's the way to maintain also some of the land that, you know, we live on. You know, can walk through my fields because I maintain it with my sheep grazing. Otherwise, you know, it's one of those things. So it's it's, and I think that I do think that a lot of people don't care, but I think that a lot of people are not even aware. And I think there was the NFU did a, and I'll find it for you if you want to put in your show notes. The NFU did a survey asking people, do you think that your dog would ever been able to chase, you know, and hurt wildlife or livestock? And the majority of people say no. And dogs that have chased, owners of dogs that have chased have been asked, did you think before they chased that they would have been able to actually chase? And they would say no. So people sometimes are not even aware that their dog is able to do something like that.
Mm.
For some reason, I don't know how that's possible, but they don't think that their little dog or whatever is going to be able to actually chase another animal and cause that amount of injury. I don't know why people would think that. It's a predator. It's a fucking predator. Sorry.
And that, no, but that is red
too.
We do have to still remember that they are a predatory animal. The eyes are at the front of the head. They have canines. They predominantly will eat a protein-based diet, a meat protein-based diet. So they're kind of in a different place in the food chain than the farm animals that are flock herd animals. But also generally, if one of the sheep panics and goes, oh my God, it's scary, the rest of them go, oh fuck, it's scary, and will follow because, oh fuck, it's scary, because we've bred them to do that. We've bred them to stick together because it's safer. That's how herd animals survive. Now I find it bizarre when people walk their dogs through livestock anyway off leads. Just
I don't do it through someone else's livestock. I don't do it.
Right. So as a farmer, we've tracked, because you are a farmer now, official.
Yeah.
as a farming dog trainer, there we go, with dogs that you know are trained around livestock, you would not go onto another farmer's property and have your dogs off lead.
No. We wouldn't do it even with the tollers that don't even want to work the sheep.
So it is that, I would love to know the mindset, because I do think that genuinely some people are just oblivious and don't realize what their dogs are capable of, what their dogs are at the end of the day bred to do, what genetics are in there. But also, like, you know, I've spoken about it with Dodge before, that like horses, llamas, cows, he's not bothered by. The first day he ever saw sheep, he went into a stalk, and I went, oh, hang on a minute, because German shepherds, yes, shepherds, they drove, it's a different process, but I did not expect him to understand what that white fluffy thing in a field was. And his whole body language just changed of, do I need to move them? Do I need to watch them? And I was like, well, that's interesting. You are now going to be on lead forever around the sheeps, because I don't want him trying to herd them.
Yeah. No. And, you know, it's like, I don't really, you know, I find people that, oh, but I don't want to have to hold the lead, very lazy. You know, it doesn't take me much to put a lead on my dogs. And if I need to walk through a field of someone else's sheep, I just put them on a lead. You know, the other option is that they have to walk behind me. What is the difference for the dog or me? You know, I wouldn't even let them leave my side if they're sheep mm-hmm. that are not mine. So yeah. What's the point of not having a lead on anyway? So they shouldn't leave the footpath. They should be under control, which means as close as possible to you on the footpath anyway. So why not put a lead on? And I'm hoping that they are trying to change the law. Because at the moment it's not, you don't have to have dogs off lead around on lead around livestock. You have to have them under control, which doesn't really tell you what you should be doing. And I would like it. And I know it would piss a lot of people off, but I would like the law to change to dogs.
But I think it's an acceptable law, because the thing is, what we see as under control as trainers and what general public see as under control are quite often polar opposites, let's be honest about it, right? I mean, it's why I don't go to the park, because I'm very lucky, we've got a really big park near us, and everyone that I've come across so far has seen a large German Shepherd with a muzzle and has called their dog back, which is really helpful. But would I walk Minx at that park with no, because I know dogs would run over to her, which would stress her out and potentially hurt her because she's old and little.
Yeah.
I think the other thing that I don't think people understand, and maybe not so much with sheep, but definitely with cattle, they can kill your dog.
Mm-hmm. They kill people. Cattle kill people more than sharks.
Fun fact.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not gonna lie, cows are freaking scary.
I don't like them.
Like, cows are scary, okay? Especially like the cattle I've kind of been around. I find dairy cattle are a lot kind of more chill because they are milked every day and they're handled a lot more, whereas beef cattle, them feckers is scary.
Yeah, they are. I'm not a big fan. I mean, some of them are cute. I quite like some types, but, you know, we will have some cattle. When there were cattle here before, we came up to the farm for a year to learn and uh-huh. everything. And they were actually grazing in one of the fields that has the footpath in, and I would avoid going through that one with the dogs.
Yeah.
Or if I had to go, I would keep an eye on the cattle and go as quick as possible to try, because they do actually get, they do get towards dogs. They do tend to do it. They're attracted by dogs. I think it's curiosity.
Yes.
But then if the dog reacts to them and they want to defend themselves, then it can become quite scary. The only dog that I used to trust walking through cows, that was Moss. He would be like a proper, you know, staring. The cows wouldn't even dare getting close to Moss. He was the only one I would. The others, I wouldn't. They're too soft. They wouldn't.
There is a reason why cattle dogs, been talking about cattle dogs previously on the series, but there is a reason cattle dogs are as, for want of a better word, mental as they are, because working cows is a lot different to working sheep. I mean, Bryony, for instance, has a hunterway for working mm-hmm. her cows. You know, not a common hunting breed that you see, kind of, or a herding breed that you see over here, thankfully, because they're another one that need to be worked. They need to be on a farm.
I like them, yeah.
And they're quite loud as well. Hunterways do
work with a bark.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They do to shout.
I mean, don't get me wrong. There are lines of border collies that will work cows. And I know a few, and I have friends online that do
there's a few accounts I follow on TikTok and stuff where they have collies working the cattle, and
yeah, and they're some of them do dogs, but they're harder than the mine. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, but like I watch them, and especially like when, and it seems to be like if it's the bullocks or some of the maybe more seasoned cows that are not as bothered by the dogs, like they will literally go to headbutt them and trample them, and the dog has to freaking move. Like,
yeah,
that's terrifying.
I know. I wouldn't want to work one of mine. I don't have that. You know, yeah, we're not going to be cattle breeder anyway that much. Mm-hmm. We're just having, if we have cattle, we'll have them for conservation reasons.
Okay.
We'll get a breed that is used for conservation. So we'll graze certain fields that we want to graze in a different way, because sheep and cattle graze in a completely different way. And then they're good to have cattle through all the sheep fields anyway. If you rest the field for the sheep, you put cattle in, because their parasite cycle is a bit different. So you give a break to the cycle. But anyway, I wouldn't use my dogs. We will bucket train them.
Yeah. No, but that, because I think people just really don't realize like how, not only are they putting, at the end of the day, if your dog is not under control around, like if your dog isn't on lead around livestock, you are putting the farmer's livelihood at risk. That's the bottom line of it. But you're also putting your dog's line at risk, because one thing that is law, and I think a lot of people again don't realize or feel like it's some old wives' tale, is that if your dog is worrying livestock, the farmer is allowed to shoot the dog.
Yeah, if they can't get the dog back in any other way and they see it happening, they can shoot the dog.
Mm-hmm.
So the law is a bit tricky in there. You can't just shoot
the farmer's
dog.
Not going to just walk out of a shotgun, load up and aim, but there have been cases that have come to light through social media where people are like, oh, this poor dog. And it's like, whoa, hang on. No. Their owner was not responsible. Their owner put their dog at risk. Like, it wasn't the dog that caused that situation. It was the owner being naive, ignorant, bloody-minded. You know, whichever one you want to pick. And I think that's where sometimes there becomes like a real issue between kind of farmers and people having a lovely walk with their dogs, right?
Yeah, and I think there is the other side of things where dogs get out of gardens, or they get out of, you know, they break a lead and they get out of a collar or harness,
mm-hmm.
and then they chase. And, you know, there is this big argument, you know, and you know, as a trainer, as a farmer, I asked myself many times, you know, about that old thing about e-collars, non-e-collars. You know, you need e-collars to train a dog aversion to livestock. And there was a TikTok kind of challenge, you know, put your dog in a field without you and sheep and see what the dog does. The one trained with e-collar will not go again, you know, will not chase sheep. The one that was trained positively will chase sheep. I would never, ever, not even let my dogs that are trained and I can call them off anything, I would never put them in a field of sheep without me being there. My own dogs, my own collies. They will not kill the sheep, but they will try to hurt them. One will keep them in a corner, the other one will run around in circles until he drops on the floor and dies. Because, you know, I bred them to be, well, not I bred them, they've been bred to work, and I wouldn't want that taken away. But it's like, I would not trust my own good dogs in a field full of sheep on their own. Why would you ever want to do that as a challenge? Why do I want to train my dog with aversion so that in the situation that, you know, my dog escapes, which shouldn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even believe that in a situation that a dog escape, even if you're training with aversion, that dog will not chase the sheep. I don't believe that.
And potentially there could be a risk that if the human isn't there with the button, is the dog going to be more likely to try and fulfill the need they want, which is going to be that predatory sequence? Because if the predatory sequence has been so heavily punished and suppressed, my argument would be, well, when it does come out, it's really going to come out and there's going to be nothing you can do about it.
Yeah, I agree.
But again, you know, like I've obviously come from horse background similar to you, and we would have like the yard dogs and stuff, and I would take my own dogs to the yard with me when I was working, and my dogs were with me. Like, If I was mucking out, they would be within eyesight. If we were catching in or like turning out horses, to be fair, normally if we were turning out catching in, I'd just pop them in a stable or put them back in the car just so they weren't getting under the horse feet. But I can always remember one day having to go into a field with my boss's horse, and I put the dog in a weight at the gate, and I went into the field, and she decided in her infinite wisdom that the weight wasn't necessary and she'd come in the field with me. And my boss's horse was a hunter, so he was used to dogs, and he chased her out the field. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not going to lie, that was fucking terrifying.
Yeah.
Because there was a very big, heavy horse chasing not a particularly large bull breed. And she'd just come in the field to follow me. And he was like, dogs do not come in our field. But when I had my collie back in the days when Mac was still with us, you know, there were a few times where I would go riding with the collie and the horse together. And it was a little bit bucket list. You know, it was so lovely to be on your horse with your dog.
I know, I did that as well. Riding. Yeah.
Now, I wouldn't have done that with any of my girls just because, I mean, the chihuahuas wouldn't have kept up. And I think for Munch, putting a bull breed in that situation would potentially have been conflicting for her. Because, you know, genetics. But I kind of go, would I want to go riding with Dodge? And actually, I think he'd be absolutely fine with the horse. I'd be more worried about something else random him kicking off at, you know. But it's knowing your dogs and knowing what they're capable of. And I do feel that people put their dogs in situations and just assume that the dog will be okay when actually they haven't prepared the dog for the situation they're putting them in.
Yes, and that's what I was going to get to. You know, I used to work with horses and I used to have Abigail and Moss with me. Uh-huh. And you know what? I think this is what the bit that is missing, and that's the bit that I want to actually fill the gap. I want to fill that gap. The fact that people never get puppies used to livestock at the age where they can learn the lifestyle is actually something to ignore and something boring. What you do that with horses, if you have a puppy that is supposed to live in a yard, you go through all the training to get that dog ready to actually...
My dogs were at the yard at 8 weeks old. Like, this is a horse.
Exactly. don't chase it. We just ignore it. It's the normal thing that is around. Okay. And of course, if they have a high prey drive and the sheep will start running, they would want to chase it. That's what they're bred to do. But I think actually training dogs to ignore livestock and training dogs that livestock is actually part of the environment and it's boring should be part of puppy classes. And it's hard because not everyone has sheep to do that. And it doesn't matter how much training you do away from sheep, you eventually have to expose them to the real deal and train around the real deal.
Yeah.
You know, it's like your recall is not going to work if suddenly sheep start running. But if you train that gradually the sheep will move because initially they're in a pen and then the pen is a bit bigger, and then they start moving and then they're free grazing and everything. You do all the training that you would do if you do proper training to get your dog generalizing recall around different situations, then livestock will be part of it. But I think, of course, it's not something that a lot of people do. So that's my project. I want to offer that to people.
Yeah.
And if I could get to puppy owners.
It is something that is difficult, especially for people that are in a much more kind of urban environment, much more built up. I mean, I was very fortunate when I was teaching puppy classes, I was on a farm and the paddock that literally was next door to the training paddock had a little cow in it and a couple of the lambs were in it. And the lambs, because they'd been bottle fed quite a lot, I would turn up and they would literally run down the field like screaming their heads off because Carrie was here and I might feed them. And Carfi, the cow, was a sweetheart as well. And she was really chill with dogs not bothered. So the puppies could learn that, oh, there are cows and sheep over there and whatever, like that's fine. It's hard to have that access. So the fact that you are now a dog training farmer, like, mate, you've got a little bit of a magical thing, right?
Yeah. So we did our first workshop on Sunday. And you know what? I'm not selling something that is a quick fix and I'm not selling magic formulas. You know, I'm not selling something that is like, I've got the magic, I've got the secrets. It's not a secret. You just train a good disengagement, you train a good recall, and you train good impulse control.
Mm-hmm.
So the dogs are equipped to be able to recall, even from movement eventually.
Yeah.
They're able to see a sheep and think, mom's got something behind for me, rather than think, oh, I need to keep stalking the sheep because eventually it will move and I'll have fun chasing it. And of course, they have to learn that delay gratification. If something is moving, we're not chasing it because I give you something to chase. So all the training that you would normally do, you do then expose it to sheep. And the first step is just learning how these skills work, because a lot of owners, you know, me and you, we know what these skills are. We are dog trainers, we do sport training, but the majority of owners have no clue how to train impulse control. They have no clue how to train disengagement. They have no clue how to train actual recall that is going to be working even in the face of, you know, big, big distractions. So the problem is that all these people don't really know how to get there. They don't even know it's possible. They don't even know how to do it. So I'm hoping to do that more and more and more. So I start with my workshops, which is just the introduction to it. This is the beginning of the journey. And I state it in my workshops. I don't want people to think that they come and they'll have a dog off lead, not chasing sheep the same day, because that's not dog training. That's fiction.
Yeah.
And then I will give access to sheep regularly. I want to put classes on in summer so that people can come weekly and actually practice recall training in disengagement and impulse control before, you know, with and without sheep. So you have to do it without sheep first, and then the sheep have to be in a pen where they can't run away and you can just train the dog. So what we did on Sunday was basic recall training games, and look at that game, disengagement, and then we apply that to the sheep in the pen.
Yeah.
In a distance. Yeah, yeah. And every dog had a different distance they could cope with.
Nice.
Some of them got quite close, some of them had to stay quite far. But all of them managed to train eventually with sheep on site, even a Malamute.
Nice. Because when we talk about, so with like the snow dogs, they are what would kind of be classed as a natural, Kim Brophy calls them a natural breed. So they're a more ancient breed, but also their prey drive is high, because that's just those dogs. They do have a high prey drive. They haven't been as domesticated as some of the other breeds, you know, when, but then I've seen huge prey drive in my Chihuahua. So, and I mean, Minx actually is worse than what Chica was, God rest her. But, you know, Minx has chased guinea fowl across fields. Minx has ignored my recall. I remember Chica going to chase a swan once, and I was like, oh my God, you're going to die. Can you not? Like, because I'm not messing with that swan if you get too close to it. And it's that whole, again, people underestimating what their dogs are capable of, right?
Yeah. And so yeah. And I know that I'm still saying you shouldn't have your dog off lead, but if it happens, because that kind of, oh, suddenly there's sheep in this field that were not there before, or sheep are good at escaping.
Yes.
They might be in a field where they shouldn't be because they jumped the fence. We had one the other day that was in the woodsland where they shouldn't be. And she found a way through the woodsland where she shouldn't be. So we had to, you know, drive her back to where she came in and then fix the fence. It happens, you know, fence breaks with all the storms we're having.
Right.
Fence breaks easily. Because a tree falls, because the wind pulls and something breaks. So you might find that sheep are out of the field, and it's not neglection, but, you know, it's not the farm is neglecting the fields. It just happens. You know, we have only 133 acres. Imagine we have 500 and have to keep checking fences and they break because the weather is horrible. It's nobody's fault. But you as owner should know these things and actually think, oh, there might be a sheep out here. So in those situations that is emergency, actually having practice recall away from sheep, having practices engagement will help you get the dog back, like it happened with Moss when I was there. And also walking through the countryside and respecting livestock, having a dog that is not barking at the end of the lead,
having
a dog that is not pulling the owner on the mud, having the dog that, you know, is actually be able to enjoy the countryside in a proper way. You know, I love my students because they come to me and they're like, I want, you know, I live in the countryside. I want my farmers to know that I'm a good citizen. So I want my dogs to behave. I know I'm going to have them on a lead, but I want them to ignore sheep when I walk through a field, especially now that lambing is approaching. This is what I want. I want people to actually say, I want to have a dog that is able to walk past sheep without looking and barking and pulling, knowing that I'm still going to have them on a lead.
Yeah. So with lambing season, obviously we're talking UK, and if you're listening in other countries, it's going to be different because at the moment, like, we're coming out of, well, I say we're coming out of winter. It feels like we're back in winter again. We've had like full spring and now we're back in second winter again because the weather's just rubbish.
Yeah.
But lambing is, so as we're recording, it is the 1st of March as we're recording. Lambing season's kind of imminent, right?
It started already. Yep. In the south, it started already. A lot of people lamb in winter, which means that as soon as the sun is out, lambs and sheep go out in the fields.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone has their own different agenda for lambing. We lamb quite late, so we are going to lamb it. Well, we lamb quite late because we got the sheep very late in and we have to do all the vaccinations. So we put the taps out very late. Probably next year we're going to be a couple of weeks earlier. So we lamb from the 18th of April and we have 4 weeks because we have two cycles to go through. But most, you know, in a lot of, and on the hills, on the fells, the higher ground, they lamb late because of course it's cold, there's no grass.
Yeah.
You're risking snow. So they lamb quite late. But in some parts of the south, where it's warmer and flatter, they're already lambing.
Yeah. So lambing can literally be from like February through to May?
Even December, January. So some people lamb indoor in winter, and then as soon as the weather improves, the lambs goes out and they can be already a couple of months old.
So
they look like sheep already.
Actually they're not, they're just baby sheep. But because I think, again, people don't realise that, you know, how I'm down south, I'm near London, you're further north. So again, just, I think you sort of go, oh, lambing, oh, it must just be 1 month of the year. Like, no, that's not how this works.
Yeah. And let's say that by April, pretty much everyone would have started lambing at some point in April.
Yeah. So that's when you really need to make sure that your dogs are on lead, because dogs can kill lambs.
Yeah.
I mean, dogs can kill sheep, but like, especially when you've got the new baby lambs that have still got their little waggly tails that are waiting to drop off and all that stuff. Like, you don't want a dog chasing those, because even a small breed could cause fatal damage.
And to be honest, lamb don't really respond to dogs either, so they will not run away.
Yeah.
They get killed.
Yeah.
Sometimes they don't respond to dogs, and it would be funny to see how my dogs respond to lamb, because I've never had them around. Well, I had them around like 8 months old lamb.
But not like baby. Not
baby. Some dogs don't even look at them like they don't even exist. But the lamb don't respond to the pressure of the dog either. They don't have that. It's funny, isn't it? They don't respond to that, to the dog. Even if the dog is stalking them. So some dogs that do work lamb, they're very patient. They wait for the lamb to move. And sometimes they even push them with the body to get them to move.
Like, excuse me, can you go now? And the lamb's like, oh, we're moving. Okay, sorry.
Yeah, that would be funny. I can't wait to see all that.
Because the thing is as well, like, I mean, I've been very fortunate to be around a few lambings at the farm I used to be at. And I used to love lambing and get to go down to the shed and meet the babies. But one of the things we used to do with the puppy class I had was we'd bring the puppies down to the shed and just hang out near the sheds. So they get used to the thing. But if the puppies did get a little bit close, the ewes would stamp at them and be like, no, baby dog, you do not come near. So the puppies were kind of taught by the older sheep that don't mess with us. If you're over there, you're fine. But if you come too close, I am going to be cross at you. But again, now you've said it, I realised that the lambs didn't used to move away from the puppies. The lambs would be like, oh, look, there's a baby thing. Hello, baby thing.
Because they're
also a baby thing. They're learning, they're bringing the world in. And, you know, I was very fortunate that the setup of the lambing shed was appropriate for dogs to kind of be within the vicinity, with being mindful not to stress the sheep out. Because I do feel like some of these, like the challenge you said about on TikTok, like, let's face it, if you're putting challenges like that where you're endangering lives, fuck off. Like, just no. Yeah. But like, what happens if that dog does do something? What happens if that dog does work through the aversion? What happens if, because the dog's not on a lead, it goes, actually, do you know what? The reinforcement you've got is not as reinforcing as chasing the sheep and the lambs are. I just don't understand why you would put your dog in a situation where either your dog or an animal or both could end up dead. Like,
exactly. But also, we breed some breeds of dogs to be so hard that I think that in the face of I get buzzed or I chase, they will still take the chase.
Of course.
Because we breed them to be like that.
And
if some breeds, you know, even with three legs, they will still chase.
But the thing is as well, and it's not even necessary. It will just be some individual dogs. It doesn't even need to be a necessary breed because you have those characters within, you know, you could be like, oh, well, it's a herding breed. But I mean, God, you could have a spaniel that goes, well, actually, do you know what? This is fun. You know, you could have any of the sighthound, because at the end of the day, when we look at what we've bred dogs to do, pretty much all of them, apart from maybe the toy section, of which there's generally a little bit of feistiness in anyway, because they're little dogs, so they get away with blue murder because they're little. Majority of dogs have had part of that predatory motor pattern selected.
Yes.
Whether it's a terrier or whether it's a bull breed or whether it's a herder or a sighthound, the chase element
is always in there.
Right?
Always.
I genuinely.
Even in the collies, you know, some people say, oh, collie don't chase, they control. Well, no, they chase. The first thing puppies do is chase. Then eventually they understand how to control and they will start controlling. But the first thing they do normally, you let them chase. And that's how you activate their interest in sheep.
Yeah. Yeah. I genuinely can't think of a group of dogs that we have interfered with as people. You know, if we look at the utilities, pastorals obviously are going to chase, your terriers are going to chase because vermin. Sighthounds chase because sighthounds. Hounds chase because hounds. Gun dogs will chase because picking, but I genuinely can't think. But what's interesting, because you have the gun dogs on, you have the tollers. So the tollers are bred to actually wind ducks up on the edge of the lakes, I believe.
Yeah, I think the tollers are a bit of a, they're a breed that shouldn't really be in the gun dogs, but they don't know where to put it. So it's in the gun dogs.
They were like, well, they work around birds. So we'll
now, a lot of toller people will get angry at me, probably for saying it, but they're not your actual normal gun dog.
No, they're not.
They were meant to attract the, you know, moving up and down, attracting the duck, so the tracks will come in, and then they will get, you know, get into the, into like, I think tolling, that's what tolling is.
That is what it is. That's where the toller comes from, is that they were there to go, hey, ducks, come over, and then get shot.
Now, I think that in Canada, they also used to retrieve the water as well.
Yeah, so because they do have the retriever part. But it's interesting that you've got a breed that is bred to work, but in a different capacity, and goes, oh, the sheep's cool. And the sheep's go, oh, it's a toller, cool.
Yeah, and actually, you know, there's not a lot of tollers that work, like gun dog working, but both the lines that are in Hester, which is our the one that we had 2 litters from, her dad does go shooting at 13 years old, and the stud dog we used in the first one is also used to work, is one of the few dogs that actually worked every season of shooting up in Yorkshire. So our the puppy we bred that we kept, her dad is one of the few proper working dogs in the UK, and still, and you know, we trained her from day one because she's supposed to, you know, she's doing sun detection training. One of the project my partner has is to maybe one day get into conservation with dogs, and we trained her from day one to ignore sheep. She would come at the training field where you trained, knew the course, so we had sheep there because it was a little farm, a small holding, and she was trained from day one that sheep are just part of the environment. You don't chase them, you don't look at them, you don't get excited about them.
They're just there.
If they move, you get a ball in exchange. you get your tuggy toy, and that's it. And that's her. That's the easiest farm dog you can have around, because she will ignore them. She will go around them. The sheep are attracted to her, which is funny. They follow her, and she's like, no. But all the three tollers are off lead around sheep. All three of them
around your flock.
Around mine, yeah, around yes. ours. They go yeah, checking yeah, yeah. the sheep in the morning. In
turn. Oh, that's cute. They're like, we will help check the sheep.
Yeah, they do. It's funny. The only one that has looked like she sometimes she helps is Tanith, which is the oldest, which is here with me in the room now. And she will, if I move sheep with Tay and my partner and Beck has Tanith, we walk towards the sheep and she will like sometimes do a couple of meters toward the sheep. She pushes them and she looks back at you and goes and eats poo. That's what she does. It's very funny. It's like she's helping, but like not too much. I prefer to eat poo.
She's like, I'll assist so I look like I'm earning my keep, but I'm not really down for this job right now.
Yeah, like, she's really funny. And I think that if we wanted to, we could probably teach them to help, like teaching them left and right and help to push the sheep, because our sheep are very responsive to dogs. So yeah. Just the movement will, you know, we'll make them move. But yeah, there's no need. We got the collies. They just learn to just mooch around the sheep. But yes, you know, and you can't tell that they don't have prey drive because they will chase a hare.
Of course.
You give them the chance. They will call off. Auri calls off hare as well. And that's part of the training we've done.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah. But if a hare pops up, the first instinct is to chase it.
Of course.
And then you can call her off. But yeah.
But I remember, like, even with, you know, Munch had a really, really good recall, and I would say with Sound Around Livestock, but there are a few times where, like, deer would appear and you'd be like, shit. And you would have a split second to get that dog. Otherwise, she would go to chase. Obviously, the deer would run. And then she would recall. But there was always that, oh, God, is she going to recall back off of them? Because chasing deer is... And you can't control that because they just appear in the woods. You know, I can always remember being out with my friend Chantelle, and one of her Shelties was a little bit naughty for deer and would not recall if she took flight. And I can remember I was slightly ahead, got round the corner and just literally saw like about 10, 15 deer in front. And the first thing I did was went, grab stuff. Before I'd even called my own dog, because I trusted my, and I was like, we do not need to be in the woods for hours waiting for this little Sheltie to decide. And again, you know, it's another herding breed. Yeah. But we knew that one of the things she would chase would be like deer. Yet at the farm they trained at, there were definitely horses, and I think there were sheep and maybe pigs. She wasn't bothered by any of them. She was like, oh, okay, whatever. They're just here. That's fine.
Yeah. That's another good point, actually, of course, is training your dogs around deer. You know, there are deer farms, deer parks that you can go and do some training. Please, people, do it, because the day you walk in a forest and you get deer, at least you've practiced a recall of deer.
One of the nice walks I have near me that I can go to is Richmond Park, which the famous Fenton video was filmed in. And one of the reasons I like going there actually is because there's certain times of the year where the deer are breeding and dogs are on lead in the park.
Yes. Which,
fantastic. Nice. And that is the rule of the park. But you still get people in the park where their dogs are off lead. And you're like, and it is generally a, sir, put your dog on the bloody lead, because we all saw the Fenton video. If you haven't seen it, just Google Fenton deer and the video will come up. And loads of people found it funny, but actually it was horrific. Like, it was bad. And for me, being able to go to such a beautiful, lovely park and know that dogs should be on lead, because that means we can go there as well and enjoy the park. And, you know, there are areas where the dogs can be still off lead, but there are big areas where you can tell the deer are. That, for me, it was lovely because there were two stags, quite young, but they were probably no more than 20 meters away from us. And Dodge was like, oh, there's a deer. And there's me like trying to get my phone. Like, oh, I could not get a picture of him looking at the deer, because he was like, oh yeah, there's deer over there. He was more bothered by the whippet coming towards us in the other direction. And I was like, really, sir? But I haven't necessarily done a lot of training with him around livestock, but he has the good foundations in the areas he needs to be able to be okay around livestock.
Yeah.
One of the things I definitely want to do with the puppy, though, I think me and the puppy need to come up for an adventure and come and visit.
I just had actually a 15 weeks old Malinois on Sunday doing the first step towards life, because they live in Wales and they have sheep everywhere.
Yeah.
So they came to do the first, you know, and I wish I had more puppies coming, because I think that is, you know, that's amazing, starting at the age where, yeah, they might have prey drive yet, but not, it's not as strong. So teaching them there that they can ignore it and they can,
and they're still learning. They're still at the moldable stage. Whereas once you've got to kind of 18 months, 2 years old, behaviors are learnt now. And of course we can add more stuff in and we can counter condition all that stuff, but surely it's better to prevent this from happening than trying to put a band-aid on afterwards, right?
Like for anything else, yes, exactly. If you start from when the puppies, that makes your life easier. They will learn better. They will learn quicker. It will be part of the foundation.
So if people are kind of listening and going, oh, I'm in the UK, what is this sheep training we are talking of? Because again, a lot of the sheep training available, unfortunately, does use aversives on the dogs. Yeah. And I would also argue puts a lot of pressure on the sheep as well. Like,
yeah,
kind of not cool on both sides.
Yeah, I don't know how they are. I know that there are a few. There's a very positive one in the south, somewhere in Devon. And I know there are a few around that use things like, you know, bottle with rocks in it and these things, which it wouldn't work on my dogs anyway. Mm-hmm. So it's not like, yeah, it just wouldn't work. They don't care about noises when they're stalking a sheep. That's the thing, you know, it wouldn't work, because I know that they want to herd more than they want, they care about the noise that you make. So working, using their intelligence and actually positive reinforcement is better than anything else, because at least you can, you know, you can work with what they really want rather than try to scare them off. That doesn't work. Yeah. So I'm in Lancashire. Mm-hmm. And as we said already, I have my own farm and I'm planning now, I'm building up my calendar. So I have a workshop in March, on the 24th of March on a Sunday. So workshops are going to be mainly on weekends, on Sundays. I'm planning maybe in summer, I will put some on a weekday as well, you know, when there's holidays and stuff, or when people might get more holidays because the weather is better. Mm-hmm. And I'm planning some classes as well eventually, which is going to be either a block of classes or some drop-in classes, like, you know, every other week there is a day where I'm there for a couple of hours if anyone wants to come and do some practice around sheep, because I think that, you know, and it takes time and it takes exposure to get to the point that you can easily say, okay, my dog sees sheep and ignores them and we can walk past them, no problem. Yeah, I'll send you the link anyway for my website.
Yeah, and then I put it on the show.
Yeah, so my business is That Will Do Academy. And I'm going to put a page for this workshop on the website. The moment is in the event section. If there is a workshop available, there is an event page and it's in there. Of course, I'm on Facebook as well. I'm on social media anyway, but yes, my calendar, my event calendar with all the workshops is on the website.
And I just want to touch as well quickly, because you've got a really good resource for collie owners. Some of it will apply to the other herding breeds, but you do have a really cool Facebook group and stuff like that. So how can people...
So I'm in the process actually to probably archive my Facebook group. I just decided I have too much in my life.
Yeah.
It's too much. It's too much. And it's a lot of my free time that it's just, I don't have at the moment. So I'm actually concentrating on my podcast, the Border Collie Geek podcast, and I'm opening probably a Patreon. So my Facebook group is going to be replaced with the Patreon.
Cool.
Which means that it's going to be less people probably, but I can give those people more time.
But also, like, I think a lot of people don't realize how much time and effort it takes to run a good Facebook group. And
it does.
You know, it's your professional time, so you should be earning from it. So I'm all for you having a Patreon and doing it that way, because I think that you need to be reinforced for your time and effort. And I mean, you've got a farm to run as well. So
exactly. I just decided that it's too much. I've got a puppy. Yeah. I've got my dogs. I've got my family. I've got my partner. I've got my farm, which is going to take more and more time, especially going into lambing. I've tried to make it run with using the help of other people, but it's my group. And, you know, people at some point get bored and stop helping. Nobody's fault, but everyone has life and they don't get anything from it. It was just done on a friend basis. Like, so I've decided to archive the group and I'm opening Patreon. So if you want to listen to another podcast and want to, you know, reach out because you have a colleague, I have many ways to do it. I've got webinars available. I have my online membership, which is my, you know, my online training. So you can join a membership and I'll give you all my time on the membership. And then I'm going to have a Patreon for the podcast.
Cool. And you did you did a webinar for the Fenzi Academy as well, didn't you?
I did a webinar for Fenzi, yeah. Which I don't think is available anymore because it's one of those webinars that are available.
So I actually think it became, because every now and again, there'll be like a, you can grab one of the old webinars sale comes on. Yes. So I know it did pop up again a little while ago because I went, I've already got that one.
I didn't know that. They didn't tell me anyway. I have the recording of that webinar as well, which is available to my membership group. You know, my members get all my webinars for free.
Oh, cool. Okay. So that's, so if you have a collie and how much is the membership at the moment in?
So if you join monthly, like pay monthly, £60.
Okay.
The more months you pay in advance, the less you pay. So if you join for a year, it's £31 a month.
Okay.
Which is nothing. It's less probably than having a Costa coffee every day.
Right, exactly that. What do you prefer, people? Do you prefer Starbucks or do you want your dog trained? Like, work out.
So it's a great community. You know, it's not just about me. It's about the community feeling. Everyone, they become friends. I do run also Collie Club. It's called the Collie Club. Mm-hmm. Collie Club training days.
Wicked.
Yeah, which is, of course, you know, all my members, they get discounts on anything. They get discounts on one-to-one training and they get discounts on coming and training with me in person. So I organize these days, which are at a very reduced price just for my members. So they get to see each other because they all become friends online.
Yeah, of course.
And they all support each other. When they have a bad day, they write on the membership group and everyone is there to support them because they've all been there.
Yep.
And then they get to know each other in person coming to the call to the training day. We have people in America or around Europe, of course, can't join us as much, but all the people that are in the UK try to, you know, to come together for those days, which is just a day. Now that I have my farm, I can't wait. We have one in March, so I open in the farm for them and we'll spend the day together. It's not really working for me. It's like, you know, we're just having fun with the dogs.
Yeah,
it's a nice community, very nice people.
I love that. That's amazing. Well, congratulations and good luck with the farming. And I'm really excited to watch the journey that you guys are on and see how lambing goes and how all the other stuff goes. And I just think it's really exciting to hear that you've kind of started this new chapter, but it's also kind of doing a little bit for the planet and all that good stuff. So well done and thank you. As always, guys, and this is probably the most appropriate time I've ever done my little finishing speech, but stay safe, be kind, wash your hands thoroughly, keep your dogs on lead around livestock, and don't let them lick toads. Take care, guys. Bye. Guys, I just wanted to ask you a real quick favour. If you could rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast, it's going to help other people find me and listen to what I'm doing here at Canine Hoopers World. We're now on all the socials. So we have the Instagram, we have the Facebook, and we are officially on the TikTok at Canine Hoopers World. And remember to check out our website, www.caninehoopersworld.com, where you can find out information on in-person courses, online courses, and if you're doing Hoopers with your dog, you can also join in with our online achievement awards. These are open to any person, any dog, anywhere in the world to come and test your skills and get yourself a cool ribbon.